Accession number 303635. It's Doug Bone, Reel 4. Now, we're talking about, you're with 1420th Training Regiment, but you go detached away for courses. After Bovington, do you rejoin them again and go back to...
I went back to Catrick, and then waited there for a short time until you were posted to a regiment. Unfortunately, I didn't get to where I wanted to go.
Now, did you have a choice? You know, did they ask you?
They said, where would you like to go? And one of the men that was on the course who was upgrading from a driver to a mechanic was in the 8th King's Royal Irish Hussars, and he said, put down to come to us. We're a good regiment. Two of us, I think, did that.
No, but you didn't really want that. I thought you wanted the other unit.
Well, yeah, but, you know, you've perhaps forgotten why you wanted the other one.
How long now? When do you leave them? You'd gone in July 48. When did you leave Catrick, roughly?
What, to go to a regiment?
Yes, to go to a regiment. Or to look at it another way, when did you go to a regiment?
Yeah. That must have been early 1950.
Or January or February.
Or January, February, March, yeah.
Now, what unit did you get then? So you put down...
So I put down to the 8th King's Royal Irish Hussars, and I got to the 8th King's Royal Irish Hussars.
Now, where were they?
They were stationed on Oadby Airdrome at Leicester.
At where?
Oadby. O-A-D-B-Y.
Now, what were your first impressions when you joined? This was going to be your home, and it was going to be
Yes, it was stark. It was an old airdrome. And you walked mile upon mile. You had to go across four fields to get to civilization. And I can remember a lot of the boys, can't walk across there, there's cows out in the field. Well, living in the village, I knew what a cow was from one end to the other, so it didn't make any difference to me.
So what about the uni? What did you think of them?
Well, it was at the end of the war. There was...
Well, it was February 50.
Yeah, but there was no troops. There was, you know, the army was depleted. They were trying to rebuild themselves. All the national servicemen had been, or the conscripts for the war, had long since got demobbed. And all you were left with was a lot of old NCOs that were running down for their pension. All right, you had a lot of young national servicemen, but there was very, very few people there. And there was there was A squadron, R squadron. I was in an Irish regiment, so you never called it A. It was always R. R squadron, C squadron. No, C squadron wasn't formed. R squadron and HQ squadron. B squadron was the demonstration squadron at the School of Infantry at Warminster.
Now, which squadron were you put into? Do you remember how they received, you know, your reception? Yeah, I presume you go in front of...
Yeah, we go in front of the tech edge.
The who?
Technical adjutant.
Now, what did he say?
Well, he said, we want fitters in this squadron, we want fitters in that squadron, we want fitters in this one.
So which one did he put you in?
He put me in A squadron.
Now, can you explain about this AR business?
Well, it being with the Irish brogue.
All right, so it's just the way it's pronounced.
That's the way it's pronounced.
I just wondered if there was something... Right, no. No, that makes sense. Now, so... What was your reception like when you joined A squadron? You'd be in the technical, the MT section, or what was it called?
Well, it was in those days, every regiment or armoured, well, every regiment had their own regimental fitters. They were capped, they were badged to the regiment. Apart, and there was also a Remy LAD unit there, which only looked after B vehicles and motorbikes and cars and what have you. But the regimental fitters had to, were responsible for the tanks, which we were. So I was in A squadron, or R squadron, let's get it right.
So what was the composition of A squadron, or R squadron? What was it made up of?
Well, there was a skeleton crew, there was each tank crew, I would imagine, had about two tanks. There were so few men, but there was a complement of regimental complement of tanks. So you took one out in turn every other day.
Now, so how did you settle in? Who were the key figures in A squadron? Call it A if you don't mind.
Yes,
I'll never get that right.
No, you'll never get it right.
Who was the major commander? I mean, you might not know, but
there was a squadron leader who was Major de Clermont.
And what was he like?
Well, dare I say it, he was a bloody queer.
Really, or just strange in his attitude?
Strange in his attitude, I think we better say.
How did it show itself? I mean, what was he like?
Well, we used to call him the cloak because he always wore a cloak and he used to ride a bike with his cloak flowing out the back, you know. And he was eccentric. All cavalry officers were eccentric.
Was he a good officer or a good major?
Oh, yeah, he was a good major. Yeah.
So he knew
his experience in career bears that out.
So he was a bit strange, but... All right, lad. What about the other officers? You know, his junior. I mean, he was commanding the A squadron.
He commanded the squadron.
So, who else do you remember? Or if you don't remember the names, what were they like? Were they good? Were they bad?
Yeah, they were all good. They spent their time hunting. They used to hunt with a beaver. They had their own horses in barracks. There was nothing to do. And we lived then in Nissen huts, and they were.
Hang on. What did you want from your officers? What made a good officer for you? At this stage, you know, when you just.
Well.
We'll talk about in action later, if you see what I mean.
I don't honestly know. I can't really answer that question. What do we want from a good officer?
Okay, well, now what about the NCOs? I presume you had a sergeant or something.
Yeah, there was a mech sergeant who was in charge of all us mechanics.
And what was he like?
He was a nice chap.
Do you remember his name?
Yeah, Jackie Moore. He's still alive. And
what was he like?
They learnt their basic engineering in the desert. They were only a step up from blacksmiths. And I said to somebody, not recently, not about army life, but I said, who was the foreman when you were there at this particular job? And the man that said, the man with the biggest hammer, he was the foreman. Now you can sum it up then from that. And I didn't stay there long because there was a vacancy then for two fitters. Someone that had come from another that wasn't...
Hang on, before we go... So had you started work for them?
Yeah.
So at Oadby? Let's have a look at that first. So what were you doing when you joined them at Oadby?
Well, we were doing basically maintaining the tanks that they had there.
Now, were they still operating on the old... daily, weekly and monthly routine?
What, the old 857s and 406s, yes.
That's it. Can you explain it for people who don't know what it is?
Well, an 857 is the number of the form used to give a tank its basic MOT, which you did every 2 months. A 406 is the same equivalent, only for thin-skinned vehicles, which you still did every 2 months.
Now, were there any weekly or daily things you had to do?
Daily things the driver was responsible for.
So what would that be?
Checking oil levels, fuel, coolant levels.
So common sense.
Common sense levels.
And you'd only step in above that. Was there?
If there was a problem, the drivers then would report it to their troops officer, who would report it to the mech sergeant, who would then send one of us young fitters to change the fan belts.
So you did the two month
checks,
and you did when you were called in between, but you didn't do anything else.
No.
You didn't sort of do a weekly thing or something. It was 2 months for you.
2 months, basically, I think.
Or the track came off, or whatever.
If the track came off, well, we had to go and out and put it back. If the fan belts broke, we had to do that. If the brakes wanted adjusting, or you had a hydraulic leak, you had to fix that.
Now, what tanks, we haven't mentioned yet what tanks they were.
They were the Comet.
Now, what did you think of the Comet as a tank? You worked on it, that's what you'd taken to bits and put back together.
Well, that was the best and the youngest tank that the British Army had at that stage. That was before the Centurion.
And what was it like? What did you think of it as a tank?
It was good.
In what way?
Well, it was a step up from its original concept, which was the Comet. The armament was inadequate, really. It was a 17-pounder gun. But it drove well. It was only 35 ton. And it performed well. It was mechanically sound.
So it didn't break down a lot. There was nothing.
It didn't break down a lot. There was silly things that did happen to it, but like everything.
Now, how did you fix some of the basic things that would go wrong? I mean, what would you do if the tracks came off? I mean, how do you fix that?
Well, you'd try and lay it out on a level piece of ground, which is, well, in this case, in Oldby Aerodrome, was on the runway. And with a tank, you could lay it out and...
Would you run it off so you'd get the whole thing off the track?
Well, you could do, yeah. Because you could drive the tank along, on the other side. Not like a car. If you take one wheel off, you can't drive the thing because all the drive goes through. There's no differential lock on a car. If you took one of your wheels off your car when you got back to the museum tonight or it was gone, you couldn't drive it home, could you? But if it was a tank, you could, because you could hold the steering brake on the broken track, and drive it with the other one.
So you could drive it off and leave the track behind on
That's
one
right.
side.
Yeah.
And then you just.
Well, you could. If you were putting new tracks on, that was what you would do: lay the new track out and then drive straight on to the from one to the other. But if it was broken, you'd obviously have to, and you needn't take it right off.
You just go to
the broken bit and change that link and put a new pin in and readjust it.
Any other basic big jobs you have to do?
Well, the biggest, the hardest and one of the silliest things, or two of the silliest things, was the hydraulic systems, which always failed.
Why?
Well, they were always, the slave cylinders in the brake drums were always leaking, and it was a pig of a job.
Was that a design fault, or was it just that hydraulics weren't very good?
Well, I suppose, basically, it was a design fault.
So why was that such a big job?
Well, you were in a very confined space. And the brake drum itself was 2 foot in diameter, and it was a lumpy old bit of kit to get out. You had to get it out and then take the brake shoes off, bearing in mind that you were leant over, nose dived into the back of the machine. One of the things with the Comet was the fact that the gear selectors were mechanically. They were big, long rods that run right along the bottom of the tank. And they used to break. But it was devised. We had to
fix that.
We then had to put a thread on where the bit was broken. You thread one end of the bar, and then the other end of the bar, and then you make a nut to screw between the two. And that was a bit of a pig.
So you started doing these jobs, and you said you weren't there long.
No, then there was a vacancy. They wanted another couple of mechanics down at B Squadron, which was at the School of Infantry. Now, B Squadron was... they'd taken all the spare men to make the strength up of B Squadron as it would have been during in war situation. So they had a full complement of men and a full complement of tanks and mechanics and whatever.
And this is at the School of Infantry at Warminster?
Warminster, yes.
And do you know when you went there?
I went there in...
roughly.
About May 1950.
So you'd only been at the other one
about a couple of months. That's right.
And so what happened there when you got there?
Well, very much the same thing. You were doing maintenance and inspections and what have you. But you... if the chief instructor... it's where they taught infantry tactics to senior NCOs and officers. And if the chief instructor said, right, tomorrow we'll do a squadron of tanks in attack with infantry support, we would have to supply him with a full squadron of tanks. Then the next day it might be infantry in attack with tanks in support. And you would still, he'd say, right, I want only want 12 tanks today, so you'd have to make sure that you had 12 tanks or whatever.
Was that sometimes difficult?
It was very difficult. We used to work nights of our own volition. This was, we weren't forced to do it, but the mech sergeant we had down there, and he again was he was in the tank corps during the war. And he didn't know what horses were. But most of these cavalrymen had been on horses before they were mechanized at the beginning of the war. They were only one jump up from blacksmiths. And as I say, we used to work nights
to make sure you got the tanks ready.
Yeah. And we'd perhaps, if during the day when the tanks had been out on the Salisbury Plain doing demonstrations, one had broken down. So we had to go out and drag that one back and then repair it, ready for the next day. That was hard work. But it was good fun.
Now, how were you settling into the unit? You know, I presume you were with B Squadron a bit longer than...
I was with B Squadron then right until I retired, until I came out of the service.
Now, who were the characters in B Squadron then?
Slim Summerfield was one.
Now, that's Barry Summerfield.
Barry.
Was he there when you joined then?
Yeah, he was there before me.
You know, we've interviewed Barry Summerfield.
Yeah, I know you have.
Slim.
Yeah.
But what were... so we know what he's like now as a 70-year-old or whatever he is, you know. What was he like then for you? I mean, did you notice him straight away? What was he doing?
Oh, yeah, he was into everything. He was...
what rank was he?
I think when I went to Warminster... what was he then? A corporal, I think.
What was he like as a corporal?
Nothing worried Barry. I was only saying to him last night, he said there was an article in the British Legion magazine about a place in Germany, Vogelsang. And he said, were you with us in Germany? Oh, I said, no. He was in Germany. When he joined, he went to the regiment who was stationed at Lingen. And then they came back to Leicester, and obviously he came back with them. So he's a little bit more, well, he's older. Yes, he is older than me, but he's done more service than me.
So what was he like? He wasn't in charge of you, was he?
No, he wasn't in charge of me. He was a troop corporal. He was a tank commander.
But you noticed him at the
time? Oh, God, yeah, when everybody noticed Barry.
What was so noticeable about him? Was it just his cheeriness? Or
that's right, yeah. If there was anything going wrong, Barry was in the thick of it.
Any other characters? So that's him. What about? Was Valance there as well?
Valance was there. Yes,
because we've interviewed him as well.
Yes, right.
Roy Valance.
Roy.
What rank was he in? What was he?
At that stage, he was the squadron sergeant major, and he was my well, disciplinarian, as you. For the want of a better word.
What was he like?
He was all right. He was a good man.
Not intimidating then?
No. I got on... Well, a lot of people liked him. A lot of people didn't like him. But I got on all right with him.
Was he strict?
Well, it had to be right for Roy. And I could bring Roy up. You know, I've known Roy a long, long time, and I could bring him up now and we could have a conversation quite happily, you know.
And could you talk to him then when you were just a private, though?
Yes.
Trooper. Trooper, yeah, sorry.
Yeah. Well, yes and no.
So there was a... I mean, you'd have
you treated them with their rank.
Now, what about any other key NCOs? Well, I mean, Barry Summerfield wasn't one of your NCOs. He was elsewhere. Oh. But who was your NCO?
He was the mech sergeant and mechanic sergeant of Beef Gun, and was a sergeant Ray Adams.
What was he like?
Well, he was a bit of a piss artist.
Did that affect his work?
Yeah.
In what way?
Well, he used to rely. There was me and a friend who joined the regiment. He did his mechanical training alongside of me, not with me, but alongside of me. And we both finished up at the 8th Hussars on the same day. And from that day onwards, we never parted. We both went to Warminster together.
What was his name?
Mal Howell. Howell. H-O-W-E-L-L.
And Malcolm. His first name? Malcolm. And so he was a trooper?
He was a trooper with me.
What was he like? Well, him and... You were talking about... Was it Ray or Roy? Sorry.
Roy. Roy Valance.
Sorry, no, Adams.
Adams, yeah.
Was that Ray or Roy?
Ray. Okay,
that's Ray, right. So what was... You were talking about Ray Adams and about him and Malcolm Howell. What effect did Ray's drinking have?
Well, he used to... Mel and I were... the two regular army mechanics at Warminster at the time. There were several of us there, but quite a few of them were National Service. And Ray used to look upon Mel and I to get him out of the muck. And if it was anything that had to be done, it was either him, Mel or I that used to do it.
So if it's a difficult job, you got it.
Well, yeah.
Because he trusted you.
Yeah. Basically, yes, you're right. And so consequently, we did, you know, the National Servicemen, they had nothing to lose, did they? Basically. When you stop and think about it. If they were going out next month or next year or whatever. But we were there for Hopefully for life, but we didn't go that far.
How did you get on with the National Servicemen yourself?
Oh, they were all right.
Did a lot of them seem to take advantage or skive, if you like? Or not?
Not really. Not with us, because it's a very difficult situation when you're in an armoured regiment.
Why?
Because there's four of you in a tank. One's the boss, one's the driver, one's the gunner, and the other's the wireless operator. But when you stop that tank and want a cup of tea, somebody's got to brew it. And if the officer doesn't get on with his men, he doesn't get a cup of tea made for him by the next man, does he? So you've got to be, you've got to gel. It's like a crew of a airplane. And this is one thing that people do not realise what an armoured regiment is like.
We'll come back to that bit, because you weren't in a tank crew just at
this
stage.
I wasn't in a tank crew.
But you knew that was the what it was like.
Well, that was the essence of the job.
Now, so, any other characters? What about officers?
Well, there again, they were all good men.
Do you know who the major commanding was, B Squadron?
B Squadron was a man by the name of George Butler.
What was he like?
He was ex-Indian Army, ex-Indian Cavalry. Came to us, he was about 6'6" tall.
It's a bit big for a tank, isn't it?
Awfully big. He was like a beanpole. He commanded us in Warminster.
And he was good?
And he was good.
What about any of the juniors, the captains and the subbies?
Another man we had was a Captain de las Casas. He was a bit eccentric.
Captain?
De las Casas, his name was. He married a Guinness in the Finnish. A Guinness woman. A Guinness heiress he was.
What was he like?
Very eccentric. He again had an Spano Squeezer car, which us fitters always used to have to pull to pieces and put different things in. We ripped the engine out of it once in Warminster and put a Dodge engine in this car.
Did that help it?
Spoiled it, didn't it? That's...
And any other officers? Not that come to mind. They were all good, though.
They were all good.